The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio.
Coming up on the program today, we're going to discuss the five don'ts of gardening, as well as growing potatoes in your backyard. Our guest is author Shelley Cram will be with us, and we'll answer your garden questions. The hour's full, so join us.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
And welcome to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy to have you along for another show. I'm your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow. Happy you're tuning in, whether you're listening to us on one of the 18 AM and FM frequencies broadcasting our program here in 2024 through our radio app, through our parent website under the Season 8 tab. That website is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com or podcast replay, in-studio video replay. Thank you so much for tuning in. You want to be part of the program, you can do that. You can give us a call anytime, 24-7, 365 at 1-800-927-7469. That's 1-800-927-7469, 1-800-927-SHOW. Or you can send us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com and we will get an answer to you. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Well, before we get in the program, Holly, it is time for this week's Joke of the Week. And this week, it's more of a riddle. Holly, what lives in a greenhouse, that lives in a white house, that lives in a red house, and has lots of babies?
Do I have to answer?
You didn't know this in rehearsal.
Is it a watermelon?
It's a watermelon. So I'll explain this. Greenhouse, the outer portion of the watermelon. White house, the white portion inside of the watermelon next to the outer portion. The red portion, the edible portion that we consume. And then the seeds are the babies inside of it.
Oh, now I get the babies part.
The little seeds.
I get it now.
Okay. Well, this riddle, this week's joke, this week's riddle is brought to you by Rescue.com.
American-made rescue products keep your family, home, and yard protected from pests, insects like wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, flies, ants, and more. Learn more at Rescue.com. That's R-E-S-C-U-E.com.
So, a lot of people have a lot of things in which they do in their garden. Some of them are very practical and proven to be very successful. Others are a waste of time, and we tell you those things that are a waste of time. We share that on our social media platforms. And a lot of people get very angry with us because we've always done it this way and we've always had a successful garden. Well, because you've done other things in addition to what you think is wonderful and perfect and perfection, you add this, but you've done other things in order to make that plant grow. So what you're doing that's been proven inaccurate or wrong, the other thing is offsetting it. So here's some... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say... We came up with a list here of what we think is some don'ts. You can always add to this list.
Oh, we could have two shows about don'ts.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, we got to keep to our time here. So the first one was yours.
Do not work wet soil. If the soil seems wet and you're going to till or you're going to disturb the soil, don't do it. Don't walk on wet soil. It compacts and it gets clotted up. You get wet soil and you squeeze it together and it dries. It becomes very, very difficult to break those clods apart. On the farm, we tried not to work the fields in that when the soil was wet. There was times where we had to work the fields in order to what they call open them up to get more air exposure, to run a tool across it to open the soil up to get it to dry. Then you had the big dry clumps, and then you would run another piece of equipment across it in order to break those chunks up back to a more pulverized soil. In the garden, let's not walk on the soil. Don't work the soil. As eager as you may be to do some work, give it time to dry out. Now, what we have also done in the past, and there's documentation of this on our website, we have planted tomatoes. And we didn't get tomatoes, let's say we're going to plant them on a Saturday. and it was going, and it rained on a Friday and a on a Thursday and a Friday, we would take large tarps and cover the soil, the area in which we were planting tomatoes. That rain came. Every other part of the garden was saturated, soaked, could not do anything. We removed those tarps, and the soil was dry to the point where it wasn't going to hurt for us to get in there and work the soil so we could get things planted. Now, you can't do that on a very large agricultural level, but on your backyard, you can cover some beds. If you're going to work a bed, you got to work. We got lives, and you got a weekend, and it's going to rain all week, but you want to work in the weekend, cover the beds with a tarp or something so the soil doesn't get wet. So you can do that.
So speaking of covering, we want to remind you, don't forget to mulch. So mulch is important because it helps. A lot of times it doesn't get rid of weeds, but it can help suppress weeds. And also it keeps the moisture in. It also protects when it rains. There are good things and bad things in your soil. It protects those things from splashing up onto your plants. So you want to make sure you are mulching. We like to use leaves as mulch. You can use shredded paper. You can use straw. You can use, this year we're going to take some landscape fabric and kind of use that as mulch.
I know some people are just, you know, horrified if people use landscape fabric, but also we are horrified at the weeds that we have. Even though we have raised beds, weeds still establish and raise beds. We're not the perfect PBS gardeners that you see in magazines and on TV. We just don't have time to spend 30 or 40 hours a week in the garden.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so then don't forget to look at the long-range forecast when you're planting based on the weather. So if you are doing something like potatoes where you know that you want the soil to be a certain temperature.
Anything, anything. Planting anything.
Well, anything, you're right. So you might think like...
Here, a perfect example. We've had now, in a lot of portions of the country, super, super warm couple of days, and then within 72 hours, it's 32, it's 25, there's 3 inches of snow on the ground.
Right. So if you're like, hey, it's Wednesday and it's been really nice out, I'm going to plant this weekend.
Don't do it.
Don't do it because it might be too soon. You might not have that nice weather. That nice weather might not last more than a couple of days.
Isn't there a proverb that says, blessed is the gardener that plants his garden once. No, wait, how's it go? Something about...
Now you're just making
stuff up. I'm making stuff up, yeah. That's what it is. It's better to plant the garden once than the second time when your neighbor plants it to the first. That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, don't be that person.
Maybe it's a beatitude.
Yeah, maybe it is. But don't plant your garden and then have to replant it because you were so eager to get it planted that everything died that you have to replant it.
Right.
Be smart about it. It's okay to be, you know, cautious.
Right. No, I agree. So another thing you can be smart about is if you go to the store to buy seedlings and you look at the seedling and it has like fruit on it already, you might think, oh, this one's going to do well because it already has fruit, but it's kind of the opposite.
I mean, we see this in June-ish, late May, early June, that 79% off, and the plant is in a 3-inch pot, and it's 2 foot tall, and it's got tiny little berries on it. The plant is stressed. It's not going to do anything. It's what is occurring at that point is the plant is root bound. It is stressed. It knows it's stressed. So its instinct by nature has put in the genes of that plant, put as much fruit on as possible. Do everything you can to put the fruit on, to carry the traits over, and then you're going to die. That's what happens. They're utilizing every bit of energy to maximize seed production in those fruits because the plant is not going to produce or live very much longer.
No, you're absolutely correct. So you just want to keep that in mind. You don't want to spend your money on that and then have...
Because you're not a plant doctor. This is all, it's already cursed. You're already 3 strikes.
You're not Captain Save the Plant. All right. So another thing you do not want to do is water inconsistently. And you just want to make sure that you are either have an irrigation system, get yourself on a watering schedule, pay attention to that because it's easy to get distracted by everything else going on with your life. And then you're like, oh, shoot, I forgot to water my tomato plants.
But using mulch also helps with this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But watering, keeping your soil at a moist consistency like a damp sponge is going to almost eliminate every single problem that your plants are going to experience in your garden. Blossom end rot, not a calcium deficiency. It's a lack of calcium being able to be picked up by the tomato. Consistent watering fixes that problem. Other problems, improper fruit development on a lot of vegetables and fruits, not enough water because it's just utilizing whatever it has in order to do that stress thing. It's being stressed and it's just trying to put something out in order to carry the traits on to the next generation.
Right, right.
And do not be, in all the work that we do, and this is the bonus one, so bonus one, you get this one for free. What in all the activity of gardening we do, whether you plant 10 acres or 5 square feet or 16 square feet or a couple of containers on a porch, patio, or deck, we are doing this, most of us, are doing this as a hobby, for fun, as a relaxation, something to decompress from the world in which we live in. So whatever you get off of your plant, be thankful, be happy with it. Don't be, well, I wish it was bigger. I wish we would have had 10 pounds instead of 5. Be grateful for what you have and the enjoyment in which that gardening activity, whether ornamental or edible, has given you.
So with that being said about being something edible, we're going to talk about Waltons. We know you care about where your food comes from. We certainly hope that it's edible when you're canning and preserving your fruits and vegetables. But what about the meats? You can go to waltonsinc.com. You can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. Do you want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created meatgistics.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. Walton's even has a full line of their own meat grinders, mixers, and sausage stuffers to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's, everything but the meat. You can use code GIRL50, that's GIRL50, to save 10% off your orders of $50 or more.
When we come back, it's going to be growing potatoes. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
If you could double the life of your raised bed boxes by sealing the wood with a clear non-toxic wood preservative, would you? Well, now you can with a clear, penetrating product called Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's 100% non-toxic and easy to apply. Seal your untreated wood surfaces, even chicken coops, by spraying on Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's invisible, seals the wood from the inside out, and never wears off. Recommended by organic gardening experts, Internal Wood Stabilizer. Check it out at TimberProCoatingsUSA.com. Have insects such as aphids or fungal gnats invaded your plants? Fight back with Summit Year-Round Spray Oil and Summit Mosquito Bits. Organic Summit Year-Round Spray Oil kills insect pests on indoor and outdoor plants. All natural mosquito bits kill fungal gnats, larvae, in container plants. Both products are harmless to people, plants, and wildlife. Summit Year-Round Spray Oil and Summit Mosquito Bit are available at garden centers, hardware stores, and at SummitResponsibleSolutions.com. Straw bale gardening is all the rage. Get your bale started easily with the Bale Buster Straw Bale Conditioning Formula. This is the only product that has been specifically formulated for use in straw bale gardening. Each unit contains 250 million colony-forming units of trichoderma, fungi, and Bacillus bacteria, in addition to the fertilizer itself, produces fantastic results with a bountiful production of vegetable crops. Start with the best to get the best, traditional or organic formula. Take the guesswork out of conditioning your straw bale. Go to balebuster.com to find out more.
Dig planting holes from a comfortable standing position. Step, twist, pull, and plant. Visit ProPlugger.com. A non-selective herbicide that is also USDA BioPreferred certified? You bet. Say goodbye to Roundup and hello to No More Weeds by Naturally Green Products. No More Weeds kills weeds with no harsh chemicals and no glyphosate. Safe around pets, No More Weeds has a proprietary sticking agent to use around gardens, pools, decks, patios, anywhere there are weeds. Available online at natgreenproducts.com, Amazon, and walmart.com. Order yours today. The same great company that brings you No More Bugs.
Welcome back to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show. Moments away, we're going to talk about growing potatoes. But first, Honey Be Healthy.
Since 2000, Honey Be Healthy has helped beekeepers maintain healthy and thriving hives. Attracting pollinators to your garden this year is as simple as hanging a hummingbird feeder with a mixture of sugar water and Honeybee Healthy Original. Don't be alarmed to see birds, bees, and butterflies dining together at the feeder. Pollinators coexist peacefully. Honeybee Healthy Inc. is offering a 10% discount on an 8-ounce bottle of Honeybee Healthy Original to this show's listeners. Enter discount code BEEGARDEN at checkout. For more information, mixing instructions, and to purchase the products, visit honeybeehealthy.com.
So, growing potatoes, some people have great success with it. Others have a challenge. And it kind of starts with the actual aspect of what are you planting? It's the seed potato. Now, we've answered the question many times on this program. Do you need certified seed potatoes in order to grow potatoes? The answer is no. The advantage to seed potatoes is they are grown and are most times, if not all times, certified to be disease-free and be pure of a lot of issues that store-bought potatoes that have sprouted in your pantry may have. However, the store-bought potatoes, we have planted them, and they have done just fine. So knowing the type of potato is also an important aspect because there are some potatoes that take 90 days to reach maturity. Some take 110, some take 130. That's a big range. And not knowing when the time to harvest or if the plant is actually ready to harvest or if there is a disease that have come into your garden, because the potatoes at the time of harvest, they will die off just like corn in an agricultural field. At the time of harvest, it will die and it's ready to be picked. Potato tops, the greens, will die back. And that's a sign in which they're not going to grow anymore. So you want to start your potatoes at root zone. You want to plant them about 3 to 6 inches deep.
Well, one thing you can do is if they've sprouted or you can figure out kind of where the sprouts are, you can cut them if you want to cut them smaller to about the size of a chicken egg. And then you can let them cure
let them dry.
You don't have to.
Right.
No. But I just want to mention that something that you might want to do.
Now, some people will say, is it good to divide your potatoes in sprout? You know, if you've got a potato that's the size of a softball and there's 3 or 4 sprouts on it and you cut the chunks of potato that has the eyes on it and they're the size of a chicken egg, or can I just throw the whole potato in the ground? Yes, because there's...
You can do either.
Right. Yeah. Universities extensions have done studies to show that the yield is the same. The only advantage to the cutting the potato in chunks is you can get more plants. The yield will be the same. So take that for what it's worth.
So you want to make sure that your root zone is going to be a minimum of 45 degrees.
Really 50. But 40 is if you really have to get in there.
You want to look at your long-range forecast like we've talked about. Just because it's 65 degrees today doesn't mean that in a week it's going to be 65.
But also at soil depth, it takes a while to get that soil to warm when it's been even moderately warm above.
Right. So that's the biggest thing is just making sure that you're not planting them too soon. And then when you do plant them, some people will hill their potatoes, some people won't, and that's kind of your decision.
The purpose of healing the potatoes, and that's the way I grew up doing it, is to keep the potato from being exposed to sunlight because then when it turns green, it's not safe to consume because it can have some dietary or stomach. It can agitate certain people's digestive system. But if you plant it deep enough in loose soil, if you got clay concrete, this is not going to be a good ending for you. You're going to put a lot of work in and get no return on your potatoes. If you've got very loose tilth soil, you can plant them 4 or 5 inches deep and soil level, soil grade, and you don't have to heal them up. Also, healing them up kind of helps you identify at the time of harvest what you got or where you're going to dig.
Absolutely. And it's some people might just like how it looks, too.
Yeah.
All right, so mulch. Do you need to mulch your potatoes? Do you not need to?
I think you should mulch everything.
I think you should mulch everything.
Straw.
I think that, straw is good. And you want to make sure you're not putting, just dumpy mulch on there. Just a thin, maybe 1 or 2 layers is fine.
Your potatoes are going to sprout, and then you can also add more a straw on top of them, and you can soak them with a hose, and a lot of that straw will filter down into the crevices between the plants in order to help retain that moisture.
So it hugs the plants.
It hugs the plants. Yeah. It kind of does the work for you. Or if you're going to have a big rain, you know, put the straw down, and then after the rain, kind of go and knock the straw off the plants in which it's kind of overabundant on top of.
Do you like hugging the plants?
You got to love your plants.
All right. So this is Joey's favorite one, is talking about this potato box that you see on the internet.
Everybody, you go on the internet and type in potato box, not tower, because that's different. Potato box. It's a 4 foot, or 2 foot by 2 foot, 4 foot square box. And the premise is you put one layer of potatoes at the bottom, and as they sprout, the box is, I think, 4 foot high by 2 foot by 2 foot. Okay, so it's a cube type thing. You put a layer of potatoes. You cover that layer of potatoes up. And as they grow, you continue to cover them up and cover them until the box is completely full of dirt. And the potatoes are growing out of the box and down the sides and across the garden. And at the time of harvest, you're going to open the sides up and you'll have 100 pounds of potatoes in that box. That is the biggest lie of any garden myth that there possibly is. If you do it in layers, you have one layer and another layer, then you're probably having more of an opportunity. And the reason why I say it is the biggest garden myth, biggest lie, there are literally hundreds of videos of this on YouTube. There is not a single one that is a 100-pound success story. They will all come in. A lot of them will come in. I'm going to harvest this. They harvest it, and they get, if not less, about the same amount of potatoes that when they planted it. And they all have some reason why it didn't work. Oh, I didn't do this right. I didn't do that. It's never going to work. So don't worry about the potato. Because here's the other thing, folks. If the potato box worked and you were getting 100 pounds of potatoes in 4 square feet, would you not think that the big boys of the potato world would have fields filled with boxes that were making 100 pounds a box?
No, because they don't have any internet.
They don't have any internet. I had a friend, and this loft, a neighbor back home, he rode his motorcycle all over the country, and he went to Canada. And he pulled up to this farm. He didn't know what they were. And he said, and he asked the farmer, what is it? And he said, potatoes. He said, do you mind if I ride around the field? And he goes, yeah. Anyway, it was 8 miles long by 4 miles wide was the size of this potato field in Canada.
That's a lot of potatoes.
That's a big field.
Wow.
And if that was the case, that these potato boxes were, they wouldn't be planting them in the ground. They would have millions of boxes.
But they don't have internet in Canada.
It's not the point.
I know. That's a big potato field.
Yeah. But, I mean, that if that was the moneymaker, everybody would be doing this. The big industries would be doing it, and it doesn't work.
Absolutely. So, can you or can you not grow potatoes in containers?
You can. You can certainly do it in grow bags, root maker grow bags. You can do it in burlap sacks. You can do it in terracotta pots. Don't expect to plant one potato and get 17 pounds. There are some potatoes that will yield or produce more than others. But, you know, you've got to plant a certain amount in order to get a decent return.
Did we grow potatoes in burlap sacks? Was that
we
what
did?
We were
growing? Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. Yep. That was cute. It was a cute little potato potato container
experiment.
Experiment. It was. Where did we get those from? Well, we got those from a coffee shop.
Yeah. But the root maker, they only last about a half season. The root maker grow bags. Coupon code root 24 root ROOT24 to save 15% on your order at rootmaker.com. They will last. We've been using them for over 10 years without any problem whatsoever.
So as your potatoes are growing, you will see sometimes little potato flowers, or even those little, they're like little tiny green seed balls as well. And that's not necessarily when it's time to harvest. When do you know potatoes are ready to harvest, Joey?
You will know when they're ready to harvest is when the plants begin to die back. And that is the proper time to harvest your potatoes. And you can dig them up with a garden fork is best. A shovel, not so much, because you're going to cut them in half. But that is the key. You don't want to eat those little tomato-looking like things on some of the plants, because those are the pure seeds. And it's a defense mechanism for the plant. So that's how you grow potatoes. So, growing potatoes, if you need more advice, you can go to our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and click on the search box and type in potatoes. You can also go to the money tab and see all the coupon codes that are available through the sponsors you hear through the program as well. Well, soon it will be warming up, Holly, and we will want to enjoy our yard without sharing it with those beetles and grubs.
Yeah, with spring pretty much here, it's time to start thinking about controlling beetles and grubs in your garden, your yard, etc. There's all sorts of always Japanese beetles being talked about. It seems like whether it be with your neighbors or sometimes even on the news, you know, they're just a thing.
GrubGon can be applied directly to your turf or ornamentals to control the grubs and lessen the impact that the beetles have on your yard this summer. Easy to apply. With any commercial spreader, or irrigate it right into the soil. It's been specifically created to target grubs and beetle invaders without harming beneficial insects such as bees, ladybugs, and butterflies.
And it's really, you know, it's the only non-chemical that works. You can find out more at phylumbioproducts.com. That's phylumbioproducts.com.
To stay with us when we come back, author Shelley Cram will be with us. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online. Make watering easy. DripWorks provides quality drip irrigation supplies and equipment to gardeners just like you for all your growing needs across the U.S. and Canada. Purchase online at DripWorks.com. Happy 65th anniversary to David J. Frank, Southeastern Wisconsin's leading landscape company. Their award-winning services include everything from lawn care, landscape maintenance, design, construction, renovation, irrigation, sustainability, and more. Big or small, let the experts at David J. Frank handle the hard work for you. Find out more at davidjfrank.com. Deer Defeat is an all-natural based animal repellent to keep deer and rabbits away from your valuable plants that is odorless after 30 minutes and dries clear. It creates a continuous, invisible shield to protect your plants. Works for 30 days through rain, snow, and freeze. Will not clog your sprayer. Apply to your property without environmental damage. You can spray directly onto your plants up to flowering, then apply around your plants to continue protection. No need to reapply. Money back guarantee. To purchase, go to deerdefeat.com and use coupon code radio to save 10% off your order.
Soil Diva Liquid Microbe Stimulant Spray improves the health of your plants you work hard to grow, stimulates the natural enzymes, and increases beneficial soil bacteria. Go to soildiva.net. Soildiva.net.
Mantis tillers, the premium long-lasting gas-powered tillers, are the perfect solution for any garden. This Mantis machine is available with 2 or 4 cycle engines with a 19-inch or 16-inch tilling width. Your DIY companion in your garden and your lawn converts easily for edging, aerating, and more with optional attachments. Find details at mantis.com.
Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you are with us today. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Shelley S. Cram loves to see the ancient word of scripture come alive in today's gardens. She has published My Father is the Gardener, Devotions in Botany and Gardening of the Bible and God's Word for Gardener's Bible, writes the devotions blog at gardeningindelight.com, and speaks enthusiastically about plants of the Bible and the connection of the garden to table to God. Welcome to the program, Shelley.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Very happy. You're also a wife, a mother of 5 children, and inspirational to write gardens. Bible grew out of a routine of a morning journalism, and you hope to finish up that in the garden. So let's start with this, Shelley. How or when or why or how did this all come together that you put the Bible and then the garden and they intertwined together? How did that all come to be?
Well, thank you. It came to be for me from another little book that I was reading. I was new to the faith and had never read the Bible growing up at all. So I was just looking for ways to understand this big, thick book. And I came across a small book written by Dr. Bruce Wilkinson called Secrets of the Vine. And in that book, Dr. Wilkinson went to a vineyard and stayed with the vine dresser, you know, the gardener who tends all the vines, and just followed him around for days, all to get insight into the passage in John 15 about I am the true vine, my father is a gardener. And so through his writing, it just opened up to me, and I was so excited. I'd always been interested in gardening. I was had a young family, so I was just barely, you know, finding enough, finish up the laundry and get out and put to play in the garden kind of thing. But it just grew as a metaphor. It was such a clear way to understand, I thought. And so once I read that little book, and that was just on grapevines, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, well, what other plants are in here? You know, what other gardens are in here? And how does the Garden of Eden tie into all this and everything? It just kind of took off in my mind from there. And from then on, every time I read a gardening book, I just always saw the spiritual overtones, you know, about growing or pruning or cultivating or, you know, the need to be watered, all these kinds of things. It just kept resonating with me, and just brought me a lot of comfort and a lot of understanding. And so I just loved it.
Not only just in the physical, you got to water the plant, but in the spiritual, we got to water and feed our souls as well.
Exactly. We get thirsty souls. We sure do.
Well, on your blog at gardendelight.com, you have a growing guide, but, you know, it seems like everybody has a growing guide. Yours is different from the one that somebody might think a growing guide is, with your plants to see, the plants to taste. Tell us more about the planting growing guide.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so my website is gardenindelight.com. And I never intended on having a website or a blog or any of that, but once I wrote my book, my first book, was God's Word for Gardener's Bible. That one, you know, it was so thick already as a Bible that we didn't have any room for pictures. And so I thought, okay, let's start a website and have a guide there so you can quickly look up the plants as you're reading the scriptures and not miss out on what those horticultural details might be telling you. So I just put things in the plant in the garden, plant guide, that, you know, just to, so you can either get familiar with the plants if you've never heard of that one, like crown anemones might be a new flower for you, so you can look those up, see what they look like. I try to include a couple photos, both of the plant, you know, how it would look if it was growing in your garden, and then also what it starts out like, if it's a bulb or seeds, and then you know, just to be able to taste and see the words you're reading. And so that's how I came to organize the planting guide. It is based on plants. That's a verse in Psalm 34:8. Taste and see that the Lord is good. So plants you can taste are edible plants, right? Like herbs, right, or fruit trees. Things you can see, I just consider those like ornamental plants that you would just grow to, you know, to look at, to be pretty in your garden or to be effective in your garden if you want a shade tree or if you want a ground cover or these kinds of things. So it's basically, you know, plants you can see or plants you can taste, and then go from there just to learn more about the landscape, which just brings the scripture alive and can be alive in your own garden if you decide to plant, you know, a few of these yourself.
Now, you are an author of two books. Can you share with us a little bit about both books and what would inspire our listeners to pick up a copy of each? And do you have a favorite book? And possibly what was the biggest surprise thing that you learned in the process of authoring these books?
Oh, wow. Okay. I could answer this all day long, but thank you very much. Yes, I have two books. So the first one was God's Word for Gardener's Bible, and that is a complete Bible, and it is a 52-week reading plan. So it's a devotional Bible. So it has all the text of the Bible, but then wherever there are plants or landscapes or gardening metaphors or gardening terms, there is a devotion by most of those, but it's along a 52-week reading plan, so you kind of read five or six devotions in a week, and they are on gardening themes. So like I was saying before, watering or cultivating, pruning, and then also the different landscapes of the Bible, like, of course, the Garden of Eden, but also, you know, Sinai Desert for you desert gardeners out there. Probably not too many in the Wisconsin area, but maybe you spend your winters in the desert. But and then, you know, palace gardens and just the different landscapes, ending in the urban garden, the sparkly jeweled garden of Revelation. So those are all in the 50, as I said, in a 52-week plan in the Bible itself. Now, my second book is an illustrated version. I like to kind of think of it as the artist's revision. It's fully illustrated, and so it's just a portion of the devotions that relate to garden work. And so it's a 15-chapter book, but it's illustrated with photographs. I got to work with the Botanic Research Institute of Texas here nearby me in Fort Worth. They have both the Brit Press, and then they're a part of the Fort Worth Botanic Garden. And so we had they have a huge library with historical botanical illustrations and an herbarium. So we photographed some of the specimens that have been collected over the years, over the decades, and even a few from last century. And then we also got to work with a local artist, and she did a fabulous job. She did the cover of the book and then also just sketches and renderings in amongst the pages. So the scriptures are pulled out and placed among different illustrations, just to give you a more leisurely way of reading it and just something also to catch your eye. So they're both my favorite. They kind of go hand in hand. Of course, one is more in depth, the first one, and the second one is more leisurely of a read, and it relates to you, you know, on the artistic level as well.
Was there any specific thing that stuck out to you in your mind going, I didn't know that? Well, I thought I knew that, but that's not what I learned.
Oh my gosh. From beginning to end. Listen, gardeners, the horticultural detail. God knows his horticulture, okay? He knows his details. He is a detail-oriented, the way he creates things and pulls things together. So where the plants are mentioned in their passages, if you know something about that plant, you will get kind of a hidden insight and a deeper picture of what's going on in that scripture. And even, you know, some humor too. So it makes it very fun to read the Bible from a gardener's point of view. And that's what was fun to me, just constantly find these surprises and these little nuances of language that make it very interesting.
Fantastic. So you talk about how you want to finish your laundry, which with five children, I'm sure there's a lot of laundry, but you want to finish your laundry to get out to the garden. Do your children join you in the garden? Is that something they like to learn as well and help with as they can?
You know what? I don't want to give a false impression that I had this bucolic life of my children gardening with me all the time. they are interested in gardening, and I assume that as they grow up, they're mostly adult now. They were kindergarten to ninth grade when I started writing, and so most of the time they were in school while I was writing, but as they are growing up and having their own homes and apartments, they're more and more interested in plants on their apartment windowsill or planting things. So it's fun to watch them grow into it. But we didn't have a lot of time. All those cute little chubby toddlers you see on Instagram following their mama around, that wasn't me. That wasn't me. They're my grandkids, but in the future, but not, that wasn't exactly how it went.
That's still a lot of fun, I'm sure, as adults watching them, you know, do their own gardening thing and knowing that I'm sure you taught them a lot of things. So that's good too.
Yes.
So we all have different types of soil. That said, is there a good baseline or guideline when it comes to soil preparations that you go by?
Well, yes. So I think probably all around the country, I'm in terribly heavy clay soil here in North Texas. So, and I know there's pockets of clay soil all around the country. So maybe we can all, some of us anyway, can relate on that level, the muscle power it takes to wrestle that clay soil. But it does just lead me right away to know that I need to prepare my soil and amend it with lots of compost and lots of organic matter. And then always to use mulch, because even that mulch will, you know, keep the moisture and keep the soil at an even more evenly moist, and then it breaks down slowly and becomes more organic matter. So, but for me, soil preparation was just a given. You know, I had to add things to the soil to make it workable,
right.
And or else, you know, do some raised beds on top and let that soil move with the earthworms and everything over time. But that's a good practice. I imagine it's the same. If you have sandy soil, you've got to add things to it to retain the water. So either way, but you know, good soil preparation, of course, makes healthy plants. And that's really the way to have the most, you know, tasty and productive garden or beautiful garden, you know, and to protect your plants against pests and invasions and things is to help that soil be healthy. So it's a good, you know, God uses everything for good. All that wrestling against the soil leads you to good soil practices. So.
Sometimes it causes you to think too.
Yes.
You being in Texas, maybe you can help some of us in the northern portions of the United States as some of these summers are getting warmer. How do you deal with the heat with your garden? What can you share with us, a few growing tips to grow in the super hot heat? Because you guys have like triple digits for weeks on end down there. And I know
we've had some pretty brutal summers, yes. So I have a handful of just general techniques. First of all, I don't garden a lot in the high heat. I really consider my garden a two-season garden, you know, a spring and a fall. And when it's just too hot, I just don't get out there. So I don't plant a lot of things that are going to, you know, need a lot of care in the high summer. That's one strategy to stay out of the heat. A second strategy is I don't know how it is exactly for you in the north, but I do recommend having an irrigation system because, you know, in the high heat, it's just hard to be the one out there with a hose all the time or adjusting and moving sprinklers around. So if it works well for you, you know, your pipes don't freeze too badly. It's a very great advantage to have an irrigation system. But the other thing that's really important is to understand your microclimates. And I don't know how much you talk about this on your radio program, but, you know, there's our general climate, but then there are little conditions within each of our gardens that either amplify the conditions or temper them a little bit. So, for example, for me, our heat is the hottest at the end of the day, 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock before that sun sets. That western sun, things on the western side of my house, look at you. They have got to be the toughest, right? And so that's not where I'm going to put my cucumbers, you know, in my vegetable garden because that last end of day blast of heat is just too much. So, but then again, you know, things that are on the east side, they're getting a nice sun in the morning and, you know, then they get a little bit of shade in the afternoon, late in the day. So that, you know, I can put some more fragile things, if you will, on that side. So just knowing your property, observing your property, you know, which tree kind of shades in the afternoon a certain section of your lawn or that sort of thing. And just watching those things can help you, you know, put a plant in the right place to grow successfully despite the heat. And then my other tip for the hot heat is go to things in the mint family. We have a lot of great herbs and shrubs that the mint family is just a little more tolerable or drought tolerant, you might say, or a little more tolerable to the full sun and the heat. So anything from the edible herbs like, you know, your mint or oreganos or thymes, sage, lavender, even lamb's ear, and then your ornamentals within that family. Lamb's ear is a great one in the heat, a great ground cover. And even though it's not in the Bible, I love to plant lamb's ear because, you know, the Lamb of God, and there's lots of flocks and shepherds in the Bible. So it's kind of fun that way. And kids love the soft leaves. So, there's some autumn sages. There's some other sages that aren't, for cooking, but they're very aromatic and they're very hardy, like autumn sage and Mexican sage and things like that. So good luck is all I can say. And you have a lot of kindred spirits down here. So
that's amazing. So, we really appreciated having you on the program. All of your great information today, Shelley, can you tell people how they can find out more about you, find your great information, et cetera?
And your books.
Thank you. Yes. Well, come to my website. It's Garden in Delight, and that stands for, it's really a code word for Garden in Eden, where God planted a garden in Eden. Eden means delight, or that's one of the translations of that, name. So to Garden in Delight is not only the place where God planted the garden, but I think it's the heart or the attitude that he wants us to have, to just have fun and be in delight as we enjoy and take care of our garden. So gardenindelight.com. You'll find, as we were talking earlier, my plant guide, a bi-weekly blog that just talks about more and more plants you can add, or just devotions you can enjoy, scriptures you can learn more about, and the plants in them. And then, of course, there's a page for my book, so you can see those there and click to the links. They're available on Amazon. They're available at also some great retail shops as well, available at the publisher's websites, and all those links are there. So, yes, would love for you to visit me. Join my mailing list. We'll have a lot of fun.
Well, Shelley, we greatly appreciate the time and the education you provided, not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. We thank you for that.
You are welcome. It's been my delight.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's going to be your garden questions and our garden answers. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Garden like a pro in three easy steps and receive customized fertilizer recommendations for your garden or lawn. Soil Savvy helps you determine what nutrients your plants need to thrive. Never again overapply nutrients they don't need. A patented process that makes you a smart gardener. To get your soil test kit, go to mysoilsavvy.com.
Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardeners, farms, landscaping, and more. To find our products nearest you, visit blueribbonorganics.com. Rootmaker starts your plants off right and keeps them going through harvest. From their seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, to their large variety of grow bags, 1 to 60 gallons, their products will provide you the harvest you've never seen before. Visit rootmaker.com. Use coupon code ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com. That coupon code is ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com.
Take the guesswork out of composting with the AeroBin 400 or smaller 200 for easy composting. The AeroBin mimics how nature decomposes waste. The AeroBin is easy to use. You prepare your balanced organic waste, just open it up, drop it in, and close. After a short time, fertile compost is produced, which is easily accessed via the lower side door. The thermal insulation in the AeroBin conserves heat, leading to rapid breakdown of the biomass, and works efficiently year-round, even in cooler regions. There is no need to turn the biomass, and it is pet and rodent resistant. It has little odor and can kill annoying weeds and seeds. It is BPA-free. The AeroBin 400 or 200 comes with a reservoir at the bottom to collect the leachate. When diluted, makes for great compost tea liquid fertilizer. AeroBin compost kitchen and garden waste quickly. Easy to assemble with no special tools needed. The AeroBin makes composting rewarding and easy. Go to burpee.com or homedepot.com to purchase. Wind River Chimes will always be the inspiring harmony. With a large selection and customization options, you will find the sound that soothes you. Visit windriverchimes.com to shop and find out more.
Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you are with us today. Time for garden questions and answers. If you've got a question, we've got an answer for you. You can send your question on over gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call toll-free coast to coast at 1-800-927-7468. 1-800-927-SHOW. That's S-H-O-W. Had a number of questions come in this week. See what we can get through to the top of the hour, Holly.
Yeah, so the first one is, how long do you leave your grow lights on for?
We leave ours from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 12 hours on, 12 hours off. There is some variations based on specific type of plants, but we're just starting onions, peppers, leeks, and some brassicas. So that's just a good recommendation. You can go 10 on and 12 and 14 off, somewhere in that range. I wouldn't leave them off any longer than 12 hours. on that end. And or I mean, you don't have to have, we talked about this, you don't have to have a grow light.
No, you don't, but
if you don't have a grow light, what is your options? Either invest in a grow light, or
you can put it in a south, you can put your plants in a south facing window, which is most ideal. Otherwise, a west facing window is good too.
We've done that.
Rotate the plants around so they don't get leggy, which means like they have too long of a stalk, or
they reach for the light, yeah, and get very weak stemmed, and then they fall over on because of their top weight. So you want to be aware of that ample light in order to do such, and you don't have to worry about having that issue when it comes to legginess. And there are some plants that are much more vulnerable to legginess, even with ample grow lights. Now, outside it's different because you got a big ball of heat and sun, you know that. But low energy or low output illumination lights, you have to put them very close to the plant. High output or bright illumination and spectacles of light, red, green, blue, white, you can put them a little higher because they're getting more of what they are needing and they're not stretching to get what they want. All right, next question is...
I want to start some seeds indoors.
Okay.
My question is, what do I start indoors?
What not to start indoors? There you go. What should I not start indoors? Well, anything that's roots, carrots, radishes, parsley, or parsnips, anything that roots, potatoes, don't start inside. Anything like that. What also you don't want to start indoors is, I wouldn't recommend cucumbers or squashes or viney crops, because they are going to grow very rapidly. They're going to be very fragile. And whenever you have to take them out to harden them off, acclimating them to outdoor temperature, you're going to have to be very ginger with these plants, because they're not just going to kind of grow slowly. We're going to have vines if you start these too early. And you take a cucumber seedling and a cucumber start that you started 4 weeks ago indoors, and you've hardened it off and put it outside. In 8 weeks, they're the same size. So green beans are a fast-growing plant. You don't have to start indoors. Really, the list of things to start indoors is actually probably smaller than the list of things you shouldn't start indoors. Corn, don't start indoors. Beets, don't start indoors. Swiss chard.
Squash.
You don't have to. You don't have to. And, mm-hmm, and we've told this story a couple of weeks ago, and we've told it before. You don't have to start anything indoors. You can directly sow everything outdoors at the appropriate time. And in some instances, that's a better way to go, because you don't have to worry about grow lights, keeping the plants watered, space, and or if you have critters or small hands that can destroy the plants or damage them or get into them and eat them. You grew up planting everything directly in the ground with no pre-starts at all.
This blows your mind.
I know, but people may be tuning in for the very first time and not knowing that that is an option.
No, yeah, you can just put those seeds in the ground, and it's a simple method, but it does work, and it's an option. So if you don't want to start seeds, or you're not really sure, or you just don't have time, or whatever.
Well, days to harvest. Let's talk about that when it comes to the seeds. Days to harvest. It's not, I planted the tomato inside on March 1st, and it's 87 days to the days of harvest. It's not 87 days from March 1st. It's 87 days from the time you physically put that plant outdoors in a container, grow bag, ground, raised bed. That's when the timer starts. It may have grown indoors for 60 days. That doesn't count. That's plant math, but that's the reality of it. It doesn't count until you actually put it outside for it to start to grow. The seed to seedling does not count time unless it's outside in the ground. So you're still going to need the same 87 days to get a tomato, whether you start it for 60 days indoors and then transplant it out. All you're doing is kind of giving it a little of a head start with a healthy plant instead of a seed.
Absolutely correct. So my pepper seedlings have salt, like stains under the leaves. What is that?
Okay, so this is a condition.
It's called edema.
It is caused by overwatering.
Yeah. So it can be caused by high relative humidity as well, lack of sunlight. So basically your plants aren't drying out quickly enough, and they may suffer from the edema. And if the soil around your plants lacks potassium and calcium, you should consider fertilizing it or one or both nutrients. Sometimes it's just a matter of letting those plants be spaced apart enough so they can dry. If you use less water when hydrating your plants, you could hopefully take care of that problem.
Now, some instances, those leaves in which have that salty deposit underneath them, they will fall off. New leaves will grow. This is just a plant telling you, hey, too much water, need to back off. That's most likely the primary cause of this. Again, like you talked about, there's other potential issues, but the overwatering, most times we think a little is good. Let's really soak them. And that actually does more damage to any plant is overwatering. And in a container, you're flushing out nutrient that the plant needs, that fertilizer, that nitrogen, phosphate, potassium, micronutrients, and all those things is not good by flushing that out.
Yeah, you definitely want to be aware of how much you're watering, especially seedlings. It's easy to overwater seedlings. It's very easy to overwater
seedlings. They're a baby.
They're basically a baby, yeah. So you want to keep that in mind. If you do feel that you need kind of some better self-control with watering seedlings, you could always get something like a spray bottle. Don't water the plants, but that way when you're watering the soil below your seedlings, you have a little bit better control as opposed to just like dumping water on them. So a spray bottle is helpful, or like a pump sprayer. Otherwise, you could even make sure that you measure it if you need to for each plant. This seems extreme, but if it's something where it becomes
There's some people that would enjoy doing that.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
A third of a cup, a third of a cup.
Yeah.
And you want the soil to be damp. You don't want to water and see the water gushing out of the bottom of a 3-inch pot. If the soil is moist, the soil is hydrated.
And it's helpful to kind of know your climate in your home or wherever you're growing these. It has been a little bit more humid this year, it seems like, for the time of year. So maybe you don't need to water as much. But if you have if you live in a drier climate, maybe you do need to water more, and that's something to consider.
Bottom watering.
Yeah.
Bottom watering is a procedure in which you put your cups or your starter tray into a 10 by 20 flat, and all of these containers have holes, like the Rootmaker grow trays. You water, you put about an inch of water throughout that 10 by 20 flat that the plants are setting in the trays in, and capillary action wicks the water up into the cells and hydrates the cells from the bottom up. You do that for an hour. After that hour, then you drain off the excess water that's still setting in your tray, and that will give the correct amount of water in each cell. You do this a couple times a week. You'll get a routine. You'll know when it needs to be watered. But that's a way of not overwatering. You're allowing the soil to say, I've got enough water. Drain the rest of this off, because otherwise it will turn into a bog and your plants will suffocate because they're not getting the oxygen in the roots and in the soil that is needed.
Absolutely. So for folks that use 5-gallon buckets as plant containers, obviously the buckets need to drain holes in them. Do you drain the holes like on the bottom? Drill the holes.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Drill the holes. Do you drill the holes like on the bottom or the side of the bucket?
We all by default would drill the holes in the bottom, 5 or 6 holes to get the water drained out. However, that is not the most good thing for the plant, I guess. What you would want to do is go up about 2 inches around the bottom of the bucket, so on the side, and drill about 4 holes around the perimeter, 2 inches up. What that is going to do is it's going to allow a water reservoir. You're going to fill the thing with soil, but when there's too much water in the bucket, then holes on the side will act as an overflow mechanism to allow that excess water to drain out. Though you still have an inch or 2 inches of water below those holes, that when the soil above it requires moisture, we talked about it with the seed trays, in that bucket, that capillary action, that water that's setting at the bottom of the bucket will wick back up and actually feed and hydrate the plant to the point where potentially could save the plant if you forget to water a day or two, that it's not all draining out the bottom and you have no reserve whatsoever. So with that being said, Holly, what did we learn today?
You know, I kind of knew this, but I learned even more that there's really a lot of correlation between the Bible and growing, planting, gardening, etc., and definitely something you don't think about all the time.
What I learned today was that Texas, at least some growers, only grow in the spring and the fall because the summer temperatures are too extreme to grow during the summer, where most of us who are listening, that's our prime growing time. What we learned today is brought to you by Honey Bee Healthy.
Whether you're a gardener, a bee hobbyist, or a professional beekeeper, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has the products to help you maintain a healthy hive and thriving garden. For more information on how to use Honey Bee Healthy in your garden, visit honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, the letter B, healthy.com. Tune in next week.
Yes, tune in next week when we will go over the world of tomatoes, as well as the unique life cycle of soil. Our guest is Jennifer Gohm, and she is a master food preserver and podcaster. She will be finally with us and will answer your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.